SROA Soundboard, a podcast for radiation oncology administrators. I'm Tamia McCausland. Kay Formanek, author of Beyond D&I, is joining us today. Welcome, Kay.
Tammy, a great good day to you and lovely to be here.
My first question for you is, how did growing up in South Africa fuel your passion and life's work in diversity?
I grew up in South Africa in the 1960s and until early adulthood. And as you may know, South Africa had apartheid, a system of legalized discrimination on the basis of race. Growing up in South Africa at such a time really does impact you. I had the privilege, however, even with segregated education, of attending a multiracial boarding school. And as a result, on the one hand, you've got a society that is very polarized on color. And on the other side, you have all the colors on the rainbow as students being part of your daily life. And it was really through that time that I saw that actually color shouldn't divide us. It's our strands of humanity that really connect us. And that really stimulated a great focus on diversity. And perhaps the last thing I need to say is in 1993, when Mandela was released and became president of South Africa, he was absolutely a role model for an inclusive leader. He really healed some of the wounds of the apartheid era, and he tried to unite people around their diversity. And that was also a great inspiration for me.
That's wonderful. Can you tell me why you wrote the book Beyond Diversity and Inclusion, Beyond D&I?
Writing the book Beyond D&I has actually been a dream. And it was a dream to take 35 years of experience in organizations and a lifetime of experience around diversity and support leaders becoming more courageous and confident in navigating the journey of diversity forward. What I found, I was partner at Accenture, and I worked with many organizations, leaders, especially in healthcare, pharmaceuticals, and different industries. And they were very focused on diversity, and yet it was a little bit more of a checklist approach. It was very focused in terms of moving some of the dimensions of diversity, but not in a very strategic manner. And so Beyond D&I looks at all the experience over the last 35 years and puts forward some frameworks and a way of leading diversity for success and performance.
What do you find most people struggle with regarding diversity, equity, and inclusion?
They struggle with actually defining it. And without defining it, it is very difficult to lead it. So what I find for many organizations when they approach me and they say they wish to do something with diversity, my first question is, what do you mean with diversity? And secondly, why is it critical for you to satisfy your mandate and your transformational agenda? And I would say less than 10% of the leaders that I've interacted with have been able to give me an answer. When you have the answer, so for example, let's look for a healthcare situation. We're an organization, we are very patient-centric. We wish to develop therapeutic solutions at a pace, and for that, we need to work 24/7 across different geographies and with a great understanding of a diverse population group. And diversity for us is different perspectives, the ability to work across cultures, and the ability to really understand our customers, our patients. Then you have a different strategic narrative for diversity. And it makes people become very strategically focused on that. So I think that they struggle with really having a clear narrative of why it's important, important, and being able to understand what the gap is in terms of what their requirements for the future are.
So with the 90% that come to you that aren't really clear about what they want to do regarding diversity, but they know they want to do something, what would you tell them to do?
I would say to them that it is very important being very clear in terms of why diversity is important to their mandate, their strategic narrative as an organization, and then to understand what the gap is and be very clear in terms of what capabilities need to be in place to close the gap. What my work has really revealed is that many organizations talk about diversity quite generally, but there are five evolutionary stages of organizations in their quest for diversity. So some organizations simply wish to have no compliance issue. We call them stage one. But there are other organizations who are looking at diversity to really anchor their transformational journey, have different perspectives on a complex landscape, etc. Those are organizations which we're saying are, for example, stage four. Now, clearly, if you're at a higher evolutionary stage of what you need to have diversity for, it needs more capabilities. And this is what I really set out, is to be very clear, why do we need diversity? As a result, then you can work back in terms of what type of capabilities do you need. Then you can work back in terms of what is the gap in our current capabilities. And then you've got the ingredients to develop your journey. That is very important. Most organizations develop or define diversity generally. They're not quite sure at what level of capability they need to be. And then it becomes actually a very generic journey that they're building.
So would you say the why is more important or is as important as the how, and also the need to be specific?
Absolutely. What I'm really saying is that you need to know the why. You need to be clear about the what, and you need to ensure that you have the how. So each organization, each leader needs to say, why diversity? What do we mean by diversity? And how do we achieve that level that we need to get to?
In your book, you talk about inclusive, courageous leadership. What is that, and how can leaders achieve it?
Leadership around diversity is one of the most critical success factors of a successful diversity journey. The reason is that many people are very cynical about diversity. And they are cynical because they feel that many organizations and leaders do a window dressing exercise, a checkbox, that they're not authentically committed to it. And people also echo what leaders do. In fact, you may know this research done by Deloitte that shows that the behaviors and the actions daily of leaders have a 70% impact on people's feeling of whether an environment is inclusive or not. Now, if you don't have an inclusive environment, even if you invite diversity in, you don't have the benefits of it because people feel afraid. So as a result, inclusive leadership is a critical success factor for diversity. And what we really have seen is that there are six traits that define inclusive leadership globally. It's not only for Western society, it's for all countries around the world. And when you have leaders who are committed authentically, when they are curious in terms of learning about differences, when they are courageous to actually intervene when biases occur and stereotypes occur, when they create the conditions for collaboration, when they're cognizant of their personal biases and that of the organization, and then create circumstances for collaboration, these are the six traits, you will find that diversity flourishes. That's why I make such a key point about the role of courageous leadership and inclusive leadership.
So in radiation oncology, for example, there's a very minor, low percentage of radiation oncologists, just as an example, who are from underrepresented groups, although they, you know, and that leads to the poorer health outcomes, I think, in some ways. So how can people apply those six traits in areas where there may not be a good representation that may reflect the patient population so that they can make things better?
So many leaders have a view, they've got a frame for leadership that a leader is knowing everything. And clearly you don't. And part of a courageous leader is actually being humble about not knowing and being curious, as I've said. So in a situation where you do not have a quorum or a large part of different nationalities, cultures, colors, etc., what is important is that you need to be very curious to learn more. So for the people who are there, even in their, if they're underrepresented group, it is having the dialogue, saying, I'd like to learn more. Please explain to me what I don't know. Please raise your hand. I invite you to allow me to be more sensitive about it. So leaders can become inclusive, courageous, sensitive leaders, even when you don't have a predominance of the underrepresented groups, by simply asking. But also, it takes work. You know, one requirement of an inclusive leader is to be cognizant of biases. Now, that is a difficult journey because there are 150 different biases, and you are unwittingly unconsciously biased. So once again, these leaders needs to be humble about it. Say, I'd love to be an inclusive leader. I know that I have some unconscious biases. I invite you as a group to attend me to that so that I can learn. And what I'm seeing is these leaders are really taking the steps to invite people to be part of the dialogue and to equip them to be, you know, culturally intelligent leaders.
Those are all great points. My next question is, you suggest that organizations and leaders need to move beyond the D&I to include E, L, and P, where E stands for equity, P stands for purpose, and L stands for leadership. Why does it need to be D plus I plus E plus L plus P?
So there has been some wonderful research by Stefano and others looking at why over the last 50 years, despite all the billions of investments that we make on diversity, that in fact, we're not really moving the needle substantially. And as you'll know, even during COVID, we have lost the last 10 years of diversity advancements because of some particular challenges that COVID have presented to underrepresented groups. And when we have been looking at why this occurs, it is that, in fact, if you invite, and that's what the D is, when you invite diversity in, and you also create inclusive environment, so that is the I, but you're not aware that actually there is no real equality that exists within an organization because of the unconscious bias and because of the systemic bias and institutional bias. And you don't have your eye on equity, which is fairness. It is not the same as equal assets for all or equal resources for all. It is being aware and sensitive that people are coming to an organization with different circumstances, and that you need to adapt the resources to support the fair participation. We talked about L. You know, many leaders outsource almost diversity, inclusion, even equity to other parts or functions within an organization and say, you know, this is your function. But as we've spoken about it, from the chair to the board to the CEO to the whole board of directors or presidents or in healthcare organizations, the various roles that are there, there needs to be a walking the talk. So that's why we really look at L. Without leaders walking the talk, you actually have what we call entropy, a loss of energy and benefits. And then the P is what we spoke about in your first question, which is the strategic narrative. If people do not understand why you need diversity and inclusion and equity and why it's strategically important for you, i.e. the purpose, people don't take it seriously. So that's why you need these. And there's been beautiful research which actually says that for too long, we focused on the D&I to the absence of ELP, and we need these five elements. And that's what I really write about.
How can healthcare leaders ensure DIELP is a strategic priority?
Healthcare leaders have a wonderful platform, actually, to invite these five elements in. And the reason I say that is that more and more, when we look at diversity, inclusion, equity, we need to have an anchor, which is very interesting and important for our younger generations. Our younger generations, whether it's our Generation Z, people under 22 years old, or our younger millennials, and quite frankly, you see it even in the other generations, people are looking for purpose, and specifically our Gen Z are looking at five things. That is, I'm diverse, most diverse generation ever. So diversity is important for me. I want inclusiveness. Equity is important. So three of the five things for Gen Z. But what they're also looking at is they're looking at things that create a more sustainable environment and for good leadership. And when you're looking at healthcare, healthcare is a chorus, it's a cry for all people, because it is one of the sustainable development goals. It is very important. And especially with COVID, everyone's attention is around healthcare. So I believe specifically within healthcare, that there is a great platform to create the purpose around diversity and around equity in terms of access to our healthcare and inclusiveness in terms of treatment of patients, customers, and employees. So I think healthcare leaders are well positioned to do that. And what I think is important is saying why these five elements are going to be important in the provision for healthcare globally and within their region.
You've kind of covered this throughout the interview, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. DE&I in healthcare needs work to improve health outcomes for underrepresented groups and to ensure physicians and other staff are more representative of the population at large. How do you think healthcare leaders can affect real change to improve health outcomes and representation on their teams?
When we look at healthcare, and I spoke at length about unconscious bias, I think what really impacted me as a researcher and a practitioner is to understand how much unconscious bias we have in healthcare. You will know some of the studies that have been done in terms of how do health care professionals treat, for example, people with obesity differently from those people who are not, or on the basis of race. You'll know that study that shows that children with appendicitis, if they are of fair skin, will have better access to pain killing versus in terms of people of color. You know, all of these things are very proficient within healthcare. And as a result, I think that people within healthcare need to understand whether that there is true fairness and equity in the health outcomes. And the reason that there often isn't is that we have inherited present unconscious biases because we don't have the diversity within our organization and in terms of the people that we provide for. And so I really think that healthcare leaders have a critical role. And I want to say one thing is, especially when you look in terms of healthcare and within, say, life sciences, what you see is that there is a big bias in terms of gender STEM, STEM standing for science, technology, engineering, maths, obviously. And what you see is that there is a high bias or preference for men in terms of STEM versus women. Now, a lot of work has been done in this area, and a lot more has to be done still. And I think within these health outcomes, if people are aware of this bias and are very prudent in terms of working away this bias, that would be really good for our society as well.
That's a great answer. Thank you. What are the aha moments in your book that people have commented on?
People have really commented about what you beautifully summarized, that they had never thought about the why, the what, and the how of diversity. And it is astonishing, given, you know, how much we actually spend in terms of diversity. But people rapidly get into the execution. I'm going to do this activity, I'm going to do that activity, without actually thinking through these three fundamental questions. The other aha has related also to this importance of leadership. Leaders do not really register the extent to which their actions, behaviors, their focus on diversity creates an environment for diversity, 70% impact. So that has been a very important one. And the other real big aha is people think generically about diversity and has never thought about the five evolutionary stages. So when they really saw that and thought, oh my goodness, now I understand that actually my mandate is perhaps stage three, and I'm actually at stage one. And now I understand what capabilities would close the gap. It gives them a better sense of how to navigate this journey. So I think those have been the biggest ahas.
What's not in the book that you would like to share with our audience?
What's not in the book? What I did within this book is I was really looking in terms of the leadership, having a methodology, really giving a leadership book. And I think what I would do perhaps in the book is say more of my personal stories. I've done many case studies, but I think that I was not brave enough to talk about the personal stories that I have come across in my career, a 35-year career in terms of a professional services organization, working in healthcare and life sciences. And I think it would have given courage to the person on the street. You know, many people think that if you've had my career, that I have not also faced many, many situations of prejudice, of discrimination, of bias, and how I overcame them. And I think that would be probably the book, these stories, because when we actually share these stories, we see we're united, all of us, by moments where we've felt desperately excluded, and what we can do to still lean forward and participate and not be pushed into the corner.
Perhaps that's good for a follow-up book, maybe a more personal take on beyond D&I.
I do so. I do believe so. I think I really wrote this for organizations mm-hmm. and for leaders. And I think the next one will be what I talk about the self. You know, many times we speak about diversity as what the organization has to do, what the society has to do. And actually, I often say when people say, oh, this will never be done, what can I do? Is I talk about the power of the self and how just the small acts that you do day to day create an inspiration. So indeed, you're right.
Thank you for your time. It was really great to have you with us today.
And I want to say thank you, Tammy, for your dedication and for making the time to record this. So thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to SROA Soundboard. We hope you will join us again. For more information, visit www.sroa.org.